This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. One of Indiana's most famous authors, Kurt Vonnegut, has a devoted fan base, especially in his hometown of Indianapolis. So much so that we have a local organization devoted to collecting and showcasing artifacts and memorabilia from his long and storied career. And after a long and arduous journey, to say the least, the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library has finally found its new permanent home. As Kurt wrote in Breakfast of Champions, there's no order in the world around us. We must adapt ourselves to the requirements of chaos instead. Well, somehow they found their way through that chaos and are now set to open this weekend. Here to talk with us is its founder and CEO, Julia Whitehead. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me.
And of course, we'd love your questions and comments. What are your favorite Kurt Vonnegut books or quotes and why? And do you plan on visiting the museum and library? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Let's start, well, at the very beginning, your Vonnegut awakening. Do you remember the first Kurt Vonnegut novel you ever read?
Yeah, I read Slaughterhouse, and I didn't immediately pick up a new Vonnegut book right after that. And then years later, I read Cat's Cradle. Well, I read Breakfast Champions and others, but God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater was the one I was reading when I had the idea for the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library.
And so at that point, you were already a pretty huge fan.
I was a big fan. I was not, you know, I wasn't one of those people who owned every book and had read everything. I'm still reading Kurt Vonnegut, which is happy for me.
Yeah.
But I had attended this memorial service for a college professor from Wabash College. And, you know, I came home that night. I didn't know this person very well. And I came home and I thought, who would I want to have a memorial for? And my thought went to Kurt Vonnegut, and then I Googled and discovered there wasn't a place where you could go and talk about Vonnegut's work and his ideas and really, you know, the kind of the fellowship around Kurt Vonnegut.
Well, was there something about God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater that you said that that's when you got the idea when you were reading that? Was it just sort of the way he waxed prose, or what was it?
Oh, it's the humanity that is Kurt Vonnegut and the description of Elliot Rosewater and the fact that he, you know, the character Rosewater is a veteran and, you know, he comes from money, but he doesn't act in a way that can sometimes be annoying. If, you know, he wants to share what he has and he understands, you know, random acts of kindness and even just a small gesture can make the difference for one person, and helping one person matters. And Vonnegut gets that across while also being funny. And in the society, the kind of, you know, absurdity of things related to, you know, corporate life and you know, even foundations and nonprofits, he just captured it all in that book, I thought.
Slaughterhouse is where most people start with Vonnegut. Were you said you weren't really hooked from then on. It was more of a slow build.
Well, and Slaughterhouse was before I served as a Marine Corps officer. And so then, you know, I've read Slaughterhouse now many times. And every time I read Slaughterhouse, it's different. Certainly having served in the military changed my perspective on that book. And I felt like I could understand Kurt Vonnegut as a, you know, more as a person, even more so than as a writer, and what, you know, what he went through, not because I had an experience like that, but because he came out of that being, you know, a pacifist and came away recognizing how we need to use humor to cope with difficult periods rather than getting bogged down in the, you know, the tragedy of it all and, you know, the hope to move forward, to move on and to not let these things drag you down.
I really shouldn't do this, so don't feel obligated to answer. But the voice in the back of my head is just screaming to ask, do you have a favorite Vonnegut novel?
Well, so it's actually, I can say a favorite novel, but I'd really rather say a favorite Vonnegut book, which is the collection of letters that Dan Wakefield edited. That collection of letters means so much to me because it came out, you know, many years after I started the museum, and it reflected the things that I believed were true about Kurt Vonnegut. And, you know, I read it and I learned a lot about him. But also I thought, yes, he is the person I thought he was. You know, there's other things that had been written about him and things that were not based on facts. And I thought, well, geez, you know, what is this person really like? But then when you read his actual words and see the correspondence, and certainly my conversations with his family and friends, because I never knew him, I never met him, but you know, I came away thinking, yeah, he's the person I thought he was. He deserves to be celebrated in this state, in this country, in this world for his thoughts about humanity and the environment and how we should take care of each other and how it's not nearly as hard as we might think it is. But also just that, you know, he wasn't a perfect person, right? And guess what? None of us are. And
he was always quick to say as much as well.
Yeah, he was pretty self-deprecating. And we love that about him. The, you know, Vonnegut fans, we embrace all that, you know, others might consider flawed about Kurt Vonnegut. We embrace it and recognize that we're all flawed.
Ken from Twitter just got a hold of us. He says his work meant that there were other people from and in Indiana that kind of saw the world like myself. It's why I'm still here to a certain extent. Let's not spend too much time on the history of your organization. There's plenty happening now that we need to get to. But for a little context, let's go back to the genesis of the museum and library. You're the founder and CEO. When did you start to feel the need to get this thing going? It was during God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, a reading of that. But
yeah, in that memorial service I went to, it was November 2008. I was still working for Eli Lilly and Company as a medical writer.
A year and a half after Kurt died.
Yes. And I stayed on for a couple years with Lilly before I could open the library. But the, you know, I didn't have you know, I wasn't from the movers and shakers in the city. I just reached out to Vonnegut fans and, you know, sure enough, people like Kip Tu, who was a civic leader here, and, you know, others, David Josie, and they helped put all of this together, those early board members, Keenan Farrell. And it's been quite a labor of love. And, you know, you think we have two full-time employees. And so everything that we do, I mean, think about that. Think about the museums in the city. There are a few of us that are small museums, but what we do, because it's not just a museum, it's suicide prevention training, it's going into schools and talking about personal narrative, it's working with veterans. We go all over the world talking about Kurt Vonnegut, talking about his different ideas. There's so much there. We're different from any other organization.
And when you started seeing the support in the community of fans and the local community, did that expand your vision for it? Did it kind of surprise you how many people were coming forward, or did it just make it seem more attainable, more possible to get there, to where you had a space?
Well, it was certainly a surprise for me in the beginning. There was a lot of, I think, locally, like, oh, we don't know what we think about this. We're not sure what this is going to be. And making sure, I think people wanted to make sure that we were true to Vonnegut and trying to figure us out as an organization and what kind of people we were. Were we hard workers? Were we going to be able to pull this off in a Kurt Vonnegut kind of way of being? But we did some market research that showed that almost a million people around the world are talking about Vonnegut on social media right now. And it's kind of what you might expect. The major university towns and cities around the world, you know, be it South Africa or China, you know, Germany and Russia and, you know, I mean, all over the place, people are talking about Vonnegut. We didn't expect that, although one of the first people I reached out to when I had the idea for this was a gentleman who helped to found the Henry Miller Library in California. And he said, you know, Julia, you're going to have a much easier time than I did because Vonnegut internationally is so huge. So even though locally we're still trying to teach people Hoosiers about who he was, you know, we'll have people coming in from around the world who say things like, I came to the United States to see the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library. And how gratifying is that to know that, you know, you created a place that people around the world recognize as a place where they can come, you know, as a community of thinkers, not just readers, but thinkers and you know, people who care about many of the things that matter to Vonnegut.
And the fans and the donors came through. You're now at 543 Indiana Avenue, which, as I understand, is where you wanted to be for a while now.
This building is the one that I always wanted. We had some fits and starts. We had a couple of heartbreaks along the way. I do need to say, you know, Katz Korn Cunningham Law Firm donated that space to us for so many years, and we could never have done what we've done without the support of Ron Katz and all the folks at Katz Korn Cunningham. But this building I wanted all along, in part because it's across from IUPUI. We have many collaborations with them, as well as many other institutions in the state and across the country. But there was something about being right there at the public university that Kurt Vonnegut loved. He loved that it was an urban university, a public school. And, you know, we've had wonderful partnerships on programs and things with IUPUI and other universities. But so that was one thing. The other part is the fact that it is in the historic Jazz District, that rich African-American cultural history. And it's, you know, I say African-American, it really... Anybody who loves jazz, who went down to the Avenue to hear a wonderful performer, appreciates that. And you know, we're so happy to partner with the Madam Walker Legacy Center and, you know, my friend Judy Thomas on, you know, figuring out how can we make this a wonderful, vibrant cultural center again in the city. And we can do it. Vonnegut would love that. We are doing the best we can to make sure that we can include all of that, you know, cultural history. It's not just about Kurt Vonnegut. It's stuff that mattered to him. Social justice and civil rights and all of these things matter to him. So we feel honored to be part of that, you know, that part of the city. And we've been working for years with the Avenue on different things. So it's really like all the stars aligned. And then, you know, later, I know Ed Batista is coming in later from Bluebeard to have Bluebeard as part of this with their restaurant, Mr. Rosewater. That's going to make our venue, you know, really the community gathering place we want it to be.
Got about 30 seconds. We first heard about this back in March. We're a long way away from March. How much work needed to be put into the building?
Well, there's the question of how much needed to be put in, and then how much can we do with our own labor?
Sure.
So many people have pitched in painting and other services. And let's not forget the 1,400 people who made it possible for us to buy that building, 1,400 donors. Mm. We're grateful.
Well, Julia, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is. We're talking with Julia Whitehead, founder and CEO of the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library, which is celebrating its grand opening this Saturday at its new location in Indianapolis. Up next, we'll talk to this year's recipient of the Kurt Vonnegut Humor Award, comedian Scott Long. And can you remember a time when you laughed out loud reading Vonnegut? What made you crack? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we get back to our show on the grand opening of the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library, I want to tell you about yesterday's show on Indiana's talent shortage and the governor's focus on workforce development. We had a lot of engagement, a lot of comments on social media that we shared with our guests. If you want to hear what got so many people talking, you can find our podcast wherever you get podcasts. Now, today's show is quite different from yesterday's show, but we'd still love to hear from you, especially if you're a Kurt Vonnegut fan. Share your favorite book and why you like it, maybe your favorite quote, or just let us know what you think of the plans for the new museum. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Back again with Julia Whitehead, founder and CEO of the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library, which is celebrating the grand opening of its new home this Saturday at noon. And right now, spoiler alert, we're welcoming the recipient of this year's Kurt Vonnegut Humor Award, comedian Scott Long. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. I do not have an NPR voice. I hope everyone can deal with that. It's a little too abrasive, a little too energetic. So hang in there with me, everyone. You're on the right station.
You've had a long career in comedy, Scott.
I have.
Almost 30 years. How much of that's been here in Indy?
All of it. Isn't that crazy?
Every bit of it.
Every
bit
of it.
You didn't ever go to the coast.
No, there's a joke about midway in my show where I say people, you know, I'm like, I know most of you are like, why is this guy not more famous? And and I ask the same thing. And then I'm like, well, I never moved to New York or LA. And in this position, in this profession, you kind of have to move to one of those places to become famous. It's kind of like I've managed to have a under the radar, very successful career. You know, I was able to write for TV for 13 years and been on TV shows, but I never really wanted to move away. I had a family, and I just didn't feel like New York or LA was where I should be. I grew up like in a smaller town in Iowa, and after college, I moved here. So this felt right. So that's kind of the long story.
I mean, did you have to sacrifice anything to stay here?
Yeah, like success on a global scale. You know, but then, hey, I ended up winning this award. So you never know. You know, it's kind of funny that, you know, you look at the chart. I mean, like, did you see Matt who has won this award before?
Peter Sagal from
right.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
He wouldn't be the number one I would choose, but if you're on this station, with your listeners, he would be number one. Go ahead.
Who's your number one? Other than yourself.
No, I wouldn't. I'd probably be three. No, I'm just, no. Like, okay, so you had Alec Baldwin.
Oh, okay.
And you had Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
And you have Peter Sagal. And you had Mike Birbiglia. It brings me back to another program that WFYI had, Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. They had a thing called One of These Things Is Not Like the Other. And I feel like I'm the not like the other. But on the same level, I probably know more about Vonnegut than maybe Peter Sagal. So there you go.
You think so?
Yeah, possibly. But please, let's not make it a quiz.
Can I jump in here?
Sure, go ahead, Julie. Yeah,
so I also want to mention my two favorite recipients. And certainly Scott would be among them now that I've met him officially.
Yeah, you met me.
But So, yeah, Gary Goldman, the comedian Gary Goldman, and also another local favorite, Leonard Hooves.
Okay.
Is one of our award recipients. And we have, folks lined up for this award. There's so many people that we want to highlight. It's not just the comedy part. It's also there's a common decency aspect to this and a little, you know, irreverence. And so we're always happy to give out the award. That event is Saturday at 8 o'clock at 543 Indiana Avenue. And so please do come on out and join us.
I'm going to put you in the spot while he's in the room. Sorry, not mm-hmm. sorry. But why Scott? Why is he the winner this year?
Because his interest in charitable giving as part of his work. I mean, that's that's really important. That matters to us. And also, he's a funny guy, right? And the fact that he is a big Vonnegut fan, all these folks are Vonnegut fans. That certainly helped them when we look at the list as a committee and, you know, throw names out there. Often it's someone like, oh, well, he's a Vonnegut fan. You know, it's like, oh, well, that automatically bumps you up in the list of possibilities.
Let's talk about your charity work. You're all over social media with Maddie, your daughter, which is really, really heartwarming to see. And that relationship has really kind of changed your work as well. Can you talk a little bit about Maddie?
Yeah, I mean, I would just give you the story arc of growing up. I was in a small town, 10,000 people, and and there was no academic anything in my house. And I remember seeing George Carlin for the first time, or actually I heard him on a record. There was these things called a record. I don't call them vinyl. Vinyl goes on the side of your house. I'm old. I call it a record. So I was listening to this. I'm like, it was a gateway drug to the rest of the world. It's like, oh, I have these thoughts and I never heard anybody speak them. So then I'm like, maybe I want to be like this guy. But then I wanted to be a writer. And then kind of like the next gateway drug in another way was Kurt Vonnegut. You know, irreverent people who used humor to make social points. And that was my goal. So then I'm like, am I going to maybe be George Carlin or Bill Hicks or somebody? So I tried hard. And I had some success at it. But I wasn't, quite frankly, I wasn't as good as them. Who is? So I moved on. I had a life with my daughter, who I was an older dad, and my daughter Maddie was diagnosed on the autism spectrum. Then I didn't know how to quite handle that with comedy, and there was a lot of nervous breakdown moments early on with it. And then I had twins at 40, and it just all became this thing, this stew of like, I'm representing something on stage that I'm not at home, and what I was trying to be, kind of social satire and edgy comedy, didn't fit with this other stuff. So I had to basically rewrite a whole act. And I did rewrite a whole act, and the first time I ever did it was actually at the Indie Fringe Festival, which Fringe Festival was nice, was I could workshop it. If I'm in front of a comedy, I'm at the Improv or the Funny Bone or Crackers or whatever, and I'm trying to workshop some of this more sensitive, more a little serious material, you know, I could have got a beer bottle to the head. So that's kind of the whole thing, and it evolved. I wanted to raise money for especially disability groups, developmental groups, disability groups. And so I tried doing that with the groups, and that was hard because often parents of kids with disabilities can't get out of the house. They're not the greatest supporters. It's not their fault. I get it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're great on social media, but they can't escape. Who's mm-hmm. going to watch their kids?
Sure.
So then I'm like, okay, I need to take this a little different route. So I brought that message, which I've done every time for the last 7 years. I talk about my daughter and my show. It's not the whole show, but it's a core element, especially at the end. And while I was becoming a different person on stage, I was definitely becoming a different person off stage. And I was learning things like empathy and patience, which I had none of. I was this bitter, cynical comic, which, you know, kind of fits the bill of what you're trying to do. You know, you think of most of the great social satirists, you don't think of the first word doesn't come out, empathy, you know.
Right.
And
but when you can fuse that,
yeah.
You get some real human
moments.
Well,
and Kurt Vonnegut, kind of what that's one of the unique things about him is there was this idea of like, let's be kind to people, even though, you know, there are some people in power or situations that I want to roast. It's kind of a mix. And that's where my head's at. And I'm obviously not Kurt Vonnegut, though now I want to be only referred to as the 2019 Kurt Vonnegut Humor Award winner. From now on, I can't believe you didn't start that one with me, Matt. But that's okay. Next time.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the shift in your career. We right. kind of touched on it a little bit. You used to be a little dirty, a little blue.
Sure.
And now you're known primarily as a clean comic,
yeah.
which is a little harder to do unless you've been doing it as long as you have. What's that transition like?
It's a big one. And I couldn't have done it my first 15 years of my career. You know, I tried. Sometimes there was, you know, some money that was thrown my way to go and do this. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to sweat this one out and try to maneuver my way. But now it is very easy for me. Though there are times I like to, you know, go, you know, I'll book myself.
Do a late
somewhere.
Show.
Yeah, and do more blue material that I just can't tap into. And I never feel like that material's better or worse than the stuff I'm doing. I just feel like there's places where people want that and people don't want it. And I kind of go where I'm wanted. You know, that's kind of been the deal. I would, you know, I've performed in 46 states and 5 countries and, you know, done it always in Indianapolis, which is kind of cool. You bring up clean comedians. If I said who is probably the most famous clean comedian now, who would you probably say?
Brian Regan
yep.
comes to mind.
Brian Regan, and there's usually one other guy.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Jim Gaffigan.
All right.
Okay,
fair
Jerry
enough.
Seinfeld. Yes. Okay. Those and you, all those were right. And I hope you have me on again, Matt. I did put you on the spot.
Congratulations.
Jim Gaffigan is from Indiana.
Sure, sure.
He's from Northwest Indiana.
LaPorte, yeah.
He never did it 1 minute in Indianapolis, though. He went to New York. He was in advertising, and then he went there. Julia's writing his name down. Let's make him
the
2020.
LaPorte.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know he was from LaPorte.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my gosh, we got to get him 2020. Maybe we can. There's time to bump Scott and put him in. So he's very expensive on a Saturday. So I would just share with you that people will say, like, you talk about your kids, you talk about food. Why are you not as successful as Jim Gaffigan? And I never had a great answer. And then I read, actually, I did read it. I saw it on Sunday morning, which is, I feel like, the only show that's not on PBS that should be on PBS.
You're right, right.
Kind of a tone and a calmness to it.
It's such a great tone, though.
It is a great tone. And he and his wife were on, and he said that his wife writes half of his material.
Yeah.
And at that
they're
point,
writing partners.
Yeah, I realized that it is my wife's fault that I am not more successful because I am 50% as funny as Jim Gaffigan.
And as I understand it, she's a big NPR fan, so she's listening, definitely listening right now.
And I'm
so this is the call out.
Yeah, that she, I mean, usually she's like, Are you going to be on some? Okay, you're going to. Yeah, I'm on this national radio show. Oh, well, what number is that on the dial or whatever? And I told her I'm going to be on this. She's like, oh, yeah, I listen to that every day. That'll be great. I won't have to do any. I listen to it at work. I mean, she's, you know how there's like six settings at least, if not 10, on your dial?
Sure.
I have never seen it not be 90. It was
90.1. 90.1, right? Yeah. Well, in Indianapolis it is.
Yeah. So it's always that. And, you know, so hey, honey. It's nice to talk to you. I'm glad you're listening for once.
I feel like I have to ask about your Vonnegut history. You yeah. read him back home in Iowa. Do you remember the first novel?
Yeah. My first experience with Kurt Vonnegut was, like most of us, Slaughterhouse-Five's Cliff Notes. That was most of us read it. I don't know who the
guy
was.
You're not getting the full experience.
I didn't get it seemed pretty good. I'm like, well, there's a couple of things I'm going to have to revisit. And then I did. And then my brother, who was definitely even more stick your finger in the eye of authority, his favorite book in the world was Breakfast of Champions.
Oh, nice.
And his second favorite book was, what's the Hitchhiker one? Douglas.
Yeah, Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Who I think was greatly inspired by Vonnegut, in my opinion. I don't know if he's ever said that. But he's like, you got to read him. And I'm like, well, I'm going to the University of Iowa right now, and everybody's talking about this is the Vonnegut house, so it's time. So I did, and I love that. So I've read many of his books since then. So, yeah, so that's kind of the story.
Julia, the grand opening is it's a good long day that culminates in a show, two shows actually, a concert at 7 o'clock. Who's playing that night?
It's, Clint Breeze, the Groove Quartet.
And Scott, how does it feel to follow what Kurt Vonnegut once called proof of the existence of God?
I mean, jazz?
Music.
Music.
You're up
I have,
next, right?
I have followed it, and I've also opened for Night Ranger and Three Dog Night, so I don't want to brag.
Night Ranger.
Yeah, that's a whole different story. Very different than this award. But no, I look forward to it. I mean, I'm very honored to be part of this. I cannot wait to see this new museum. I'm totally stoked for that. And people should come out if they're fans.
Julia, you're going to be at Spirit in Place tonight. You're doing an event with Spirit in Place?
We do. Yes, we do have. We've been all in Spirit in Place this year.
And
glad to be part of.
You mentioned
events.
Dan Wakefield earlier. He's going to be there as well. What's the event tonight?
Yeah, that's with the Can-Can, which you can talk to Ed Batista about that a little bit. That we'll be watching a film and talking about free speech and a panel discussion on free speech with Louise Henderson of the Can-Can.
Yeah, we actually had her on the show on Monday. The movie is Storm Center.
That's right.
The Bette Davis film, kind of a forgotten film from the 50s.
I had not even seen it before.
I had never heard of
it. It's a great free speech film. And also just the, how scary things can get when people, do that groupthink thing and forget what people are contributing to society.
And free speech is a big part of the museum and library. You've got a whole exhibit to free speech.
We do. In fact, our mission statement is celebrating Vonnegut through advocating for free speech and common decency. So our freedom of expression exhibition, which is not completed, we raised the $1.5 million for the building, and then we didn't raise one more dollar after that because we didn't want to ask 1,400 people to give again immediately. But we're still raising money. In fact, we have a Kickstarter right now to finish our Slaughterhouse-5 exhibit if you go to VonnegutLibrary.org, because the deadline's the 13th of November, and we're sitting at about 33% right now. But anyway, the free speech exhibit, it is not just Kurt Vonnegut's challenges with, his books being banned, but it is a celebration of free speech history. We worked with Big Car, who created collages on tabletops that will be on our first floor of free speech highlights and, periods of history, so people can learn something. Other free speech activists will be featured as part of that, even though there'll be a heavy emphasis on Vonnegut. But we want to do a lot with that exhibit. When we get the funding, there will be a wonderful touchscreen where people will be able to learn about some of those historic landmark cases in free speech. A quiz, take the quiz. Very few people will pass, and it's kind of scary that we don't actually know what our free speech rights are and what they are not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with respect to sort of social media and online platforms and whatnot, where they can make their own rules, certainly. That's certainly the case. Clark from Facebook writes that one of his favorite Vonnegut quotes is from Man Without a Country. "The good earth, we could have saved it, but we were too damn cheap and lazy."
Yes.
Scott, in regards to free speech, have you ever felt held back in your work? We got about a minute left.
Yeah, no, that I feel held back by only having a minute to describe this, actually. No, there's a real challenge going on right now. And most of my career, it was the right that was, I felt like I always was the one that was putting their finger down on what we could say and do. And there's some challenges coming from the left now, and most comedians are struggling now more from the left than they are from the right. So, and
political correctness.
Yeah, and it goes beyond political correctness to the point where political correctness is a great thing in many ways. Political correctness, if it means being kind, being decent to people, is one thing, but that does, you know, limit art in some ways, and there's a real dance that we're doing on the line, and I know the Vonnegut Museum's probably right in the middle of that idea.
Comedian Scott Long is the recipient of the 2019 Kurt Vonnegut Humor Award. We're also here with Julia Whitehead, founder and CEO of the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library, which is celebrating its grand opening this weekend. Up next, we'll welcome Ed Battista, who's opening up a space in the new library. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library, which is celebrating its grand opening. The new permanent home opens this weekend in Indianapolis, and we're joined by its founder and CEO, Julia Whitehead, as well as this year's recipient of the Kurt Vonnegut Humor Award, Scott Long. And now we're welcoming Ed Battista. He's the owner of Bluebeard?
Yeah, one of the partners.
Sure. And it's the award-winning Indianapolis restaurant named after the 1987 Kurt Vonnegut novel. And he'll be opening up a new venture inside the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library. Ed, welcome to All In.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Matt.
Of course, we'll take your questions and comments, especially if you're a Vonnegut fan and you're wondering about the new museum. Ask anything you want. Or if you just want to share your love for Vonnegut with a favorite book or favorite quote, please do so on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. We've had some great ones so far. Ed, before we get to the new venture, let's talk about Bluebeard. Was it just a cool name lifted from a Vonnegut title, or is there more meaning there?
Well, we a big group of friends, a lot of my friends left town to go try and do something better. They tried to go to Chicago or New York or L.A., just spread out, thinking that they needed to go elsewhere to do something, you know, wonderful.
Right.
And a select group stayed in town and tried to do what we thought was great, and we did it because we love the city. So we were trying to key in on what is really meaningful in this city and what should we be celebrating. So we had this restaurant. We had a neighborhood that we really liked. And one night we're having beers on the roof. It was me, John Adams, Chris Benedict, I think John Brooks from Milktooth. Benedict has a love handle. And Chris just goes, "Hey, man, you remember that book we read in high school? You remember Bluebeard?" And we were like, yeah, we remember that book. But we all went back and read it after that. And one of the first lines in there, it says, "Something went horribly wrong in the kitchen." And we were just like, "I think we have it."
Okay. Wow. All right. And this new business that'll be in the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library, what is this?
So we're doing a coffee shop cafe concept. Since Bluebeard and Amelia's are sister businesses, we've been working really hard to put out a really cool pastry program at our flagship storefront that's in front of Bluebeard. So we're going to take a lot of that over to create a place for students to hang out since we're so close to campus, a campus that I actually spent a lot of time on. And then fill that out with soups and salads and sandwiches and things simple but really well done.
Scott?
I had a question for you, Ed. So will that be open on Saturday night?
This coming Saturday night?
Yeah.
No, not yet. No, we're still working on our building.
Because I've been on a low-carb diet the last 2 weeks, and I was thinking after the celebration I wanted to look, you know, good for the photo of my award. I was thinking I'd hit some pastries. You don't have that.
We'll have lots of pastries
all
through the day at the Vonnegut Library
on Saturday, so there you go.
The events.
Okay, question two. Did you ever think of, like, having a naming another Vonnegut book after a restaurant, like having an all pork one and call it Slaughterhouse Five or something like that? No.
Well, there is a pizza here in town called the Slaughterhouse Five. Actually.
Oh my gosh,
it's a meat lover's pizza. I can't remember where actually.
Yeah, it's good. It's not vegetarian.
Giacomo Pizza.
Is it Giacomo's? Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Ed knows all.
This new cafe, it's going to be called Mr. Rosewater.
That is correct.
Yeah. Oh. And so why that one?
I like the name.
Okay. So that was the one where you liked the name.
We were going – we have a event space in Bluebeard that we have affectionately named the Rosewater Room.
Ah, okay.
So
– all right.
Julia is a natural extension.
Well, and, you know, it's kind of – poetic that he would choose Rosewater, because when you think of the Batista family, we've been involved with this family for years, Sherry and Tom, and they've done so many things for us over these years, and they're doing wonderful things in this city, you know, as community advocates and, you know, thoughtful people trying to make this community better. And you know, I mentioned the God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater book. I mean, they are perfect examples of Rosewater going out and doing what he can to make his community better.
And like it or not, Julia, a museum is an occasional or a one-time visit for most people. Do you think that adding this business, the Mr. Rosewater Cafe, will give you a little bit more regular traffic?
It's just going to make a huge difference. Our whole concept for this building is not like any, you know, other museum. And when you think about when I mentioned all the social justice things that we do with our community partners who are skilled in, you know, things like mental health and other things, this is a place to gather. That's what we always wanted. We learned from our past in our strategic planning sessions and our public that people love the programs every bit as much as they love seeing the, you know, Vonnegut's typewriter or these other things. So we're, you know, we're a museum and library, we're a lending library, but our programs are the heart and soul of what we do. And then to have a place where people can have a cup of coffee next to a priceless artifact, where can you do that? Where can you have, you know, we have a piece of the Berlin Wall as part of our free speech exhibit. And, you know, somebody will be eating a sandwich or whatever standing next to the Berlin Wall piece. It's very cool.
You've got lids on these coffee, right? If there's priceless artifacts, yeah, I don't want somebody spilling, like,
can
you know.
You carry the coffee through the museum?
Yes, you'll be able to do that. I mean, we have free days and stuff, but it's – there'll be admission, and members always get in free. You might want to go get your membership now, by the way, because that will change when we open, because we have more expenses, right? But, yeah, you'll be able to do that. And we have that great balcony on the second floor where, you know, be able to utilize that in the summertime. We have invested in some of the, you know, very best materials for archival, you know, preservation. And so this is what we wanted to do. We recognize that, you know, the risks we're taking, but we also feel like we have done our due diligence to make this work. And what a cool experience will that be to hear jazz up on our beautiful second floor, which, by the way, you can rent out for all kinds of family events or corporate events. It's the Frank and Katrina Basile Community Room, wonderful venue for events, windows all around it, beautiful balcony. You'll see. It's a beautiful place to be.
Jesse on Twitter with one of his favorite Vonnegut quotes, "We are what we pretend to be, so we must be careful about what we pretend to be." And he goes on, "Thank you, Mr. Myers, my junior year English teacher, for exposing me to my now favorite author." And Donna from Twitter says, "As an architect who prefers doing renovation projects, I have always loved Kurt's observation that a large part of the problem of society is that everyone wants to create and no one wants to maintain." I feel like that speaks to your sort of taking of this old building, which dates back to, what,
1882. Yeah, 1882, I want to say. I think I just messed that up, but it's somewhere around there.
Well, and his father was an architect, too, and so it all kind of comes together.
Yeah, and I think, we at the grand opening at noon, you'll hear an architectural historian Bill Selm talking about that history. If you want to show up for that, and you know, we'll tell that story going forward as well. But that building's been used for a lot of community gathering, whether it was a pub or a record store, vinyl.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, record store.
I mean, lots of things. It was a great place to gather. The maintain part, I know I keep coming back to this stuff. We raised the money to buy the building, but the maintaining part. That's why we hope that people will become members, show up, get some coffee, make it one of your hangout places, because it is much more than just a, you know, once a year, check it out. We have so many artifacts and things that we'll be able to change out those exhibits all the time. There's always going to be something to do at the Vonnegut Library. Lots of events so that, you know, people are gathering in those evenings, whether it's jazz or, you know, history or, you know, other programs.
Scott.
One of the things that I feel like is a common theme, what you're hearing is Ed had friends that moved to Chicago, correct? Mm-hmm. You know, and you were like, you know what, let's hang out here. Let's see what we can create here. And I feel like there's so much, there's this idea in Indianapolis that I think a lot of times it's like we have to go somewhere else to get these like great food or great comedy or go to these great museums. And they're all here. And people are working in Indianapolis that have been here for a long time. And they go there and like, I really can't tell the difference. I thought maybe if I went to this magical place where this happens, it's all going to be different, you know, and I find like most of these people also wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a fine bottle of wine and a box wine. They just want to impress their friends or something. There's nothing more impressive to impress your friends than one of the 10 or 12 greatest authors in the history of America who's from your hometown and whose family built many of the great buildings of the early 20th century. It's a really cool thing, and I'm proud of being from here.
And what I love about it is what Scott's saying is everything that Kurt Vonnegut said when he wrote about Indianapolis. You know, he knew this was a special place, and yes, sometimes he would make fun of it because he wanted the best for Indianapolis because Indianapolis gave him the very best it had when he was growing up here, you know, and then things change here and there. But he always wanted the best for Indianapolis. And we are, you know, we do have a very special community. I promise I'm not on the Visit Indy payroll here, or Leonard Hoop, so I keep plugging. But it's a real special place. We have journalists coming in from all over the world for this grand opening. The Economist, for example.
Oh, really? You're going to have somebody from...
Can you believe that Kurt Vonnegut would probably get a kick out of that he made it.
Well, through searching for all these great things throughout the country, what people really want and what they really end up finding is a community. Right. And this library is going to create a community. Having the ability to be involved and have this cafe, I'm excited to find a new community right there on a campus that I know so well.
Well, and Ed, speaking of community, aside from your restaurant, soon to be restaurants with the Mr. Rosewater Cafe opening this weekend, you're arts people. And your family's also behind the Idol, that interstate viewing park on the I-65, I-70 collector in downtown Indianapolis, which for people who don't know is a spot with seats and a sunshade where you can literally just sit and watch traffic. And it's been covered on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. It's been featured on CBS Sunday Morning. Talk about a callback, a double callback. And I don't know why, but somehow I can imagine Kurt Vonnegut appreciating that if he were still alive. Something like that. Now, how did that come around? I mean, what was the idea to sit and watch traffic?
Well, it was my dad's idea. And he
Tom.
Tom Batista, my closest friend and best business partner. That we had two neighborhoods that were divided when the interstate came through, and we had this kind of wasted piece of land that in the middle of all this traffic that everybody likes to complain about. Why not turn that into a feature? Why not make that a place to go, a destination to try and kind of bridge that gap between those two, you know, once separated communities?
Julia, so here we are. The work's been done. Saturday's coming up. Let's hear about the grand opening event that you have planned. I understand that Kurt's daughter, Edie, will be in town for the ribbon cutting.
Yeah, Edie, it'll be wonderful to welcome her. She has not been here since we opened the last building in 2011. So having her back, she's really special. She is an advocate for so many of the things that mattered to Vonnegut, such as gun control and you know, other things. So the ribbon cutting, there'll be a number of speakers as part of that and music. And, you know, there's stuff all day long. The Happy Birthday Wand of June with the Indianapolis Opera, they gave us this 11-foot-wide tiger, an artistically created tiger skin. It's so wonderful. It's so wonderful. I do want to correct when I said that bit about The Economist and Kurt Vonnegut making it. I recognize that Kurt Vonnegut making it has is not about The Economist. It's just that seemed like a funny thing to me of all the publications that wanted to come for the grand opening and be there.
Maybe The New Yorker would be a little bit more appropriate.
But it was The Economist. But the journalist who's coming is a Midwesterner. And so the very same thing that Scott and Ed are saying about, hey, there's a lot going on in the Midwest that's, you know, under-recognized, often because of the negative political things that sometimes come out of our state or neighboring states. But back to the grand opening, so it goes literary journal, you know, this is one of those things, sort of like our humor award. We don't care the level of notoriety somebody has if they're talented. We want to recognize that talent. So our literary journal, we have 26 contributors coming in. Some of them are New York Times award-winning writers. Others are, you know, just local or national up-and-coming artists or poets. And it's really, a special thing to see people. We have the Armistice Day event, which has scholars coming in talking about Vonnegut's experience, the great artist Lance Michio coming from L.A. who created 50 pieces of art on Slaughterhouse 5 with each paragraph that he used when he was creating the art. He'll be talking about that. And then, yeah, of course, our comedy event in the evening and our musical performance.
Scott, when are you? Can we say when you're showing up so people can maybe hobnob with you?
I think I'll. I don't like to talk to any of the regular folk before my show. I get into kind of a yoga, kind of a meditation trance. No, 7:30. I'll probably get there.
So when the music is going,
going on, so we don't have to have really any depth conversations. It'll be too loud, but. No, I'd love to talk to everybody. And if you want to learn a little more about me, you can go to scottcomedy.com, and it gives some more insights on this mysterious person who's lived here their whole career and is more famous in other parts of the country than here, kind of like Kurt Vonnegut.
Julia, you've kind of dedicated your life to sustaining the memory of Kurt Vonnegut, and I think it's safe to say that it's his perspective, and certainly the way he presents it, that fans love most when they read him. When a writer passes, and he's been gone for 12 years now, that work then exists, as he said, like bugs in amber. But there's sort of an evergreen quality to his perspective, isn't there? What do we still have to learn from him?
Oh, what do we have to learn from him? I think it's the getting caught up in the moment. You know, we see this now with free speech, and it's exactly what Scott was talking about with comedy or social media or, you know, whatever. For me, it's a lot of, not taking ourselves so seriously that we can't laugh at ourselves. And you know, that's a big part of it. The environment, his message is timeless when it comes to, you know, public school funding and public libraries, the environment, war, the unnecessary loss of American and other lives over war. He is timeless. We didn't know how it would go when he passed away. I was told in 5 years he'll still be a thing or he won't. And what we have discovered is, you know, he is a Mark Twain, a John Steinbeck, and some of these other great American thinkers, not just writers, but American thinkers who will withstand the years and remain relevant.
The grand opening of the new Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library is this Saturday, starting at noon at 543 Indiana Avenue in Indianapolis. You can find tickets on Eventbrite. And it has been my pleasure to have its founder and CEO, Julia Whitehead, with us. Julia, thank you so much and good luck.
Thank you.
And he's the 2019 Kurt Vonnegut Humor Award winner. Comedian Scott Long will be performing Saturday night as well as part of the grand opening. Thank you for showing up today.
Really looking forward to Saturday night.
And opening Mr. Rosewater's Cafe in the new museum and library building is Ed Batista. Ed, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Join us tomorrow when we'll talk about the suspension of Indiana's Medicaid work requirement as a federal lawsuit challenges some of the rules around that program. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. And we'll come back tomorrow at this time for that conversation. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.